This is 11, lesson 11 of the elementary Greek grammar, the present omai indicative verb. Paragraph 11.1 is the vocabulary list. I will read the words and make a few comments, I think, about some of them. The first one is apokrinomai, I answer. It takes the form 3 for its direct object. Very strange. It does not take the so-called accusative form 4 for its object. Arko, I rule. Arkamai, I begin. This is actually the same verb with two different endings. The irregular omega ending that we learned earlier, and now the omai ending. Balo, I throw or cast. Ginamai, I become or come to be. And it takes a complement like I me. It's a state of being verb, that is. Dekamai, I receive. Eremos, hay. Deserted place, usually just translated desert or wilderness. Erkamai, I come or go. Now the next few verbs are forms of erkamai with prefixed prepositions, which changes the meaning slightly, and you'll see how that works. Op erkamai, I go away or I depart. De erkamai, I go through. Ice erkamai, I go into or I enter. Ex erkamai, I go out of, or I have seen this translated in modern terms, I exit, although that's probably not the best translation. Pros erkamai, I go to or come to sometimes. Soon erkamai, I come with, come together. Now remember, erkamai can mean I come or go. Most of these are translated I go rather than I come. Soon erkamai normally is translated I come with or I come together with, something of that nature. It can mean to go with, but I don't know if it's very common. The word for heart, cardia, hey, feminine noun. The verb for I proclaim, keruso. Keruso is usually translated I preach, but today the word preach has taken almost exclusively a religious background concept with it. That's the connotation. The verb actually just simply means to proclaim something, and that's what preaching originally was, and you could do it whether it was a dissertation on scripture or any other proclamation, and that's why keruso is such an important word. The word for heaven is uranos, masculine noun, ha. The word for I go here is peruomai. There's two words that can mean I go. Erkamai can mean that. Peruomai can mean it. Both are omai verbs. I save, sozo. Look at the peculiarity here. Under the initial omega, there's a iota subscript. We won't talk about why that occurred, but it is there and it should be noted. And finally, in this list, phone, hey, means voice or sound or noise. It can mean all of those. Of course, we get words like telephone from that, which means a distant sound or a different distant voice. Tele means distant or far away. 11.2, vocabulary form. Three common vocabulary forms for verbs exist in Koine Attic Greek. The vocabulary form of the verb is the form used when looking up the word in a dictionary or lexicon. In Greek, it is the first person singular of the present indicative of the verb. Now, that's why all the verbs we learn are vocabulary form. We are memorizing the vocabulary form as the first form we memorize. We studied the first vocabulary form beginning in lessons 2 and 3. These are the verbs that end in omega, exemplified by the verb luo. That's the verb we used. In lesson 9, the me vocabulary form occurs, exemplified by the verb I me. The me conjugation has several verbs which will occur in subsequent lessons. The third common vocabulary form is the omai form introduced in this lesson. Technically, it is a subset of the omega form, but in practice, it is actually a separate form. This form is regularly referred to as a passive voice form, which is misleading. It is true that the form can indicate a passive use of an action verb. However, many verbs take the omai form that cannot be passive, and several occur in this lesson. For instance, the verbs genomai, and also we're going to find erkomai, cannot be passive. Genomai cannot be passive because it's a state of being verb. Also, dekomai and its related verbs cannot be passive because they cannot be active. Erkomai cannot be active, it can't be passive. These verbs are, by nature, intransitive. Only transitive verbs, that is, verbs that can take a direct object, can also be passive. Some verbs that are, by nature, intransitive regularly take the omai as their vocabulary form. That's true also. There are a few verbs that take the omega as their vocabulary form that are also, by nature, intransitive, but it's more rare than. Probably the most common one is huparkon, which is translated, I exist. That verb is a state of being verb, even though it has the omega ending, and it's intransitive by nature. Another function of the omai form is to change the basic meaning of a root. Note again that the vocabulary forms of two verbs occur, arko and arkomai. These verbs share a root, which is alpha rho ki. I put it in uncials there so that it'll stand out. This is the way that roots are normally written in Greek, meaning be first. That's the meaning of this concept here. But by using different vocabulary forms, the Greek expresses two different emphases of being first. Arko, first in position, translated, I rule. Arkomai, first in time, I begin. So here's another meaning used for the change from an omega to omai. It doesn't go from active to passive. It just changes the meaning of the root or reemphasizes the meaning of the root. Unfortunately, Greek grammarians have muddled the teaching of the omai form. As noted above, verbs ending with omai endings can be passive, and so grammarians often call this set of endings the passive form. And then there's a footnote here, and I want you to notice this. Ray Summers, in Lesson 8 of Essentials of New Testament Greek, refers to these as primary passive endings, which characterizes the basic function of the ending as being ending set as being passive. This is the normal transition traditional approach. However, a great number of verbs that end in omai are not passive at all, and some simply can never be passive because they are by nature intransitive. We must conclude that to call these passive endings is simply inaccurate. They are not, and have never been, exclusively passive endings. And this is a muddling of the function of the Greek language. The endings can be passive, and that's all that we can actually say about them at this point. Let's go back to the paragraph that we didn't quite finish at the interruption of the footnote. However, this is incorrect, as already noted. The omai verbs can take an object and so be active voice, and they do. They do sometimes take objects. There are quite a number of examples of that in the New Testament. Furthermore, verbs who have only omai forms, such as several in the vocabulary list for this lesson, are thought to have lost, quote-unquote, their omega forms, and are often called deponent verbs. The word deponent is footnoted. It comes from the Latin deponere, to lay aside, as though these verbs have laid aside their active form. Even Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary under the word deponent expresses this fallacy. It is a fallacy. They did not lay aside their active form. In fact, they're also identified this way. Let me read that paragraph again. Furthermore, verbs who have only omai forms, such as several in the vocabulary list for this lesson, are thought to have lost, quote unquote, their omega forms and are called, often called, deponent verbs, which are then identified as, quote, verbs in the passive form, but with active meanings. This is also incorrect. And then again, I footnoted that. An example of one who still uses the term deponent is Daniel Wallace in his terribly flawed Greek grammar Beyond the Basics. While there is much useful material in the book, Wallace's philosophical approach to grammar is so wrong-headed as to make his entire approach suspect. For a better approach to intermediate grammar, see James A. Brooks and Carlton L. Winbury, Syntax of New Testament Greek. However, even this fine work struggles with the distinction between transitive and intransitive, stating that passive verbs are intransitive. Actually, they are transitive passive. For whatever reason, Greek grammarians have a very difficult time with this concept. It's sad, and it's misled and misemphasized the Greek language for years. Next paragraph. A third problem is the use of the phrase middle voice. Summers defines the middle voice to mean that the subject, this is another quote, the subject is acting so as to participate some way in the results of the action. That's very nebulous. You're going to see in a moment. The problem with this approach is twofold. Number one, sometimes verbs with the omega set of endings also do something similar because they can be intransitive complete and also emphasize the subject is acting. This is often true with verbs of motion. I'll just throw that in, such as erkamai and peruomai and some other verbs. And two, the reason for calling the omai form middle voice is actually a function of the context in which verbs can emphasize the subject in some way. In other words, it's not in the ending, it's not the form, it's the context that says that the subject can be emphasized. True, the form allows for that, but it doesn't force it. And it's not the inherent meaning of the form. It allows for the contextual considerations of the emphasis to be there. In other words, contextual considerations have been confused with a set of endings, which are said to indicate that the subject somehow participates in the result of the action. Indeed, Summer's definition of the middle voice could also be applied to the passive voice, in which the subject also participates in the result of the action. So it's very confused. This grammar, the one that you're using now, approaches the use of the omai endings in a much simpler way, emphasizing contextual and lexical uses over the application of something called the middle voice. Nevertheless, the student must be familiar with the phrase middle voice, since it occurs regularly in the traditional approach to Greek grammar lexical studies. Some use middle, simply the word middle, to indicate that the verbs have the omai ending. That's all that they mean by it. Other times, its use simply seems to indicate that a verb has changed from an omega set of endings to an omai set of endings. And I should have added here, I'll just mention this, without becoming passive. One of the things that happens if an omega verb changes to an omai set of endings, sometimes, not every time, but sometimes that indicates a move from active to transitive passive. But there are other times, many other times, in which that's not true, and so they don't call that passive, they call it middle voice, but that's an unfortunate designation. Let's talk about then paragraph 11.3. Voice in verbs. People use voice and verbs instinctively from childhood. Nevertheless, it's a difficult idea to explain. As stated, voice refers to whether the action of a verb is received by a direct object or by its subject. Only action verbs can have voice. That means a state of being verb can have no voice. Technically, only two voices exist, active and passive. Both are transitive and should be referred to as transitive active and transitive passive. Both of them transfer the action of the verb upon a noun, either the subject if it's passive or a direct object if it's active. The active voice, again, do not confuse active with action. Only the active voice indicates that a direct object is receiving the action of an action verb. If an action verb does not have a direct object, it cannot be active voice, even though it takes the same form as an active voice verb. If an action verb has no direct object, but the subject is acting, not receiving the action, the verb is intransitive complete. A great, huge number of intransitive complete verbs occur in the Greek New Testament and are completely ignored as such, forgetting the purpose for an intransitive complete verb. No grammarian that I know of ever comments on that fact in their grammatical workups. If the subject is acting and the sentence has a direct object, the verb is transitive active. And by the way, I will say here, should be parsed that way. Here's an example in English. The baseball player threw the ball. The verb is transitive active because the subject, player, performed the action, threw, and the object, ball, received the action of being thrown. Remember, if a subject acts, but the action verb has no direct object, the verb is intransitive complete. And let me just stop and say here, if you look up most of these verbs in a parsing guide of some kind, sometimes on, you can get them in electronic form these days, and such Bible works and so on, they will always, almost always, parse the verbs as actives because of their form, just because it has an omega ending. But if it has no direct object and it is not passive, the verb is a complete or an intransitive complete verb. Here's an example. The halfback ran to the end zone. I put some hyphenated things in here just for fun. The subject performed the action, ran. The halfback ran. But there being no direct object, the action verb is intransitive complete. The verb is voiceless action, is a voiceless action verb. Often intransitive complete action verbs are followed by prepositional phrases, but it is not required that they do so. Intransitive complete action verbs emphasize the subject as acting. Yes, they do. Even if they're an omega verb, even if they do not have an omai ending. So you cannot take Summer's meaning for an omai verb somehow emphasizing the subject. That's true with omega verbs quite a lot of times when they're intransitive complete. Intransitive complete state of being verbs emphasize the subject as being. This is a very important truth and has doctrinal implications that are very strong. We'll talk about that when we come to the verb. Well, we won't do it in this lesson or in this course, but when Jesus says, I am, that's an intransitive complete state of being verb emphasizing the subject, the I, who is Christ himself. And it emphasizes his being, the fact of his existence. And so that's very, very important. This concept of the complete verb must not be overlooked. If the subject receives the action of a verb, the voice of the verb is transitive passive. Example. The ball was thrown to the catcher. The verb was thrown is transitive passive because the subject, ball, is receiving the action of being thrown rather than doing the throwing. The actor, in this case, is unknown. The ball was thrown to the catcher. We do not know who threw the ball. We do not know who the actor is. We know who received the ball. That's the catcher. But the ball itself received the action of being thrown. Notice also, and this is just a by the way thing, in English, we use forms of the state of being verb plus the past participle of the verb to indicate passive. In this case, was is a form of the verb to be, and thrown is the past participle of the verb throw, was thrown. That's the normal way in English in which we construct passive voice verbs. Now, most students and children, we do it from our youth, and we don't stop to think about that, but that's in fact what we do, was thrown. We can even make that linear, was being thrown, with two state of being verbs, was and being. So this is the common form. Here's another example. This is a little different. The ball was thrown to the catcher by the pitcher. It's really the same sentence, isn't it? Except it says by the pitcher. Let me read this. Again, the verb is transitive passive, but here, the actor is known because it is stated in the prepositional phrase by the pitcher. This is quite common in English and in the New Testament as well, as we will note. The forms for the present transitive passive of luo are in the following chart. The present transitive passive indicative of luo. And I'm going to go through this chart with you. First person, luomai, I am loosed. Or it could be translated, I am being loosed. Lue, you are loosed, or you are being loosed. Luetai, he, she, or it is loosed, or is being loosed. Luamatha, the plural form, we are loosed, or we are being loosed. Luestha, you are loosed, or you are being loosed. Luantai, they are loosed, they are being loosed. And the luestai, to be loosed. Now here's something interesting about the infinitive. You may have noticed this by now. Infinitives have no time of action associated with them. This is called a present infinitive because of the form, but it is not present time. Infinitives are timeless verbal forms. That's why they're called infinitives. Not the only reason, but that's the main reason. As noted above, these endings are not limited to transitive passive verbs. They can also occur on transitive active, 2, intransitive complete, 3, intransitive copulative, state of being verbs. Only context can determine which is true. Generally speaking, if the vocabulary form has an omega ending, like luo, it is likely that the change to the omai set of endings indicates that the verb has changed from transitive active to transitive passive. However, please note that this is not universally true. What I do, just by the way, is when I see that change and I know the verb has an omega ending in its vocabulary form and it changes to an omai set of endings, I try to translate it as a passive. Oftentimes it'll work. Sometimes it won't. And sometimes it'll work when it shouldn't work because the context indicates that it's not truly a passive. So you've got to be careful here. Remember, Greek was a living language at the time the New Testament was written. It doesn't follow rules the grammarians set down. It follows function. Function's the key to all of this. For instance, an omega verb can change to an omai verb one, change the meaning of the root. We've already seen that. Or two, to indicate an intransitive function that is not passive, such as emphasizing the subject as acting, or even as a possible reflective use. That is where the reflexive pronoun must be supplied. The reflexive pronouns, if you have forgotten, are himself, herself, itself, ourselves, and so on. Ultimately, context is the determining factor. Memorize the following endings: the present omai endings with the omicron epsilon thematic vowel, and the actual charts on the next page. I just say memorize them the way they operate. Omai, a, atai, amatha, estha, antai, and then the infinitive esthai, to be, whatever the main meaning is. Now, again, we have the thematic vowel there, and so on. We'll talk more about the thematic vowels as we go through the lessons. But the first letter of each of these forms, except for the second person singular, is omicron or epsilon, and that is actually not part of the ending. That's actually a buffer vowel between the stem and the ending of the verb. We might as well, but we just memorize them as endings, realizing that that first letter may change, and that's exactly what happened with the second person. The epsilon thematic vowel was added to an ending that probably was epsilon yoda I, and when an epsilon is attached to another epsilon, they combine, and that combination changes them into the long form of the epsilon, which is the eta, and if there was a yoda following, it becomes subscript. The reason for that is iotas following a long verb are not pronounced. And so the development came about so that the iota was written subscript in the minuscule alphabet. It became silent, in other words, and so that was a convenient way to show that. How the passive voice works. This is a rather important section here, and you will want to go through this several times, I think. Since the passive voice indicates that the subject is not acting, one may not know who is performing the action, the verbal action. When the actor is expressed in the sentence, one finds it in a prepositional phrase. Such phrases are said to indicate the agent of the action. When it comes to agency, four possibilities exist. Number one, no agent expressed. The passive voice action verb may have, no expressed agent. This is very, very common in the New Testament. The student should always look to find an expressed agent, but not speculate as to agency if no agent is expressed. Assume that the author left out the agent for a reason. However, the agent may be implied by the context, especially if somewhere in the context the action is being performed by an individual and is so stated. It could be a series of action verbs that are indicated the action of one individual, and at one point a passive is used, and then you'll know who that individual is. It's likely that individual is still performing the action. But oftentimes you'll come across a no agent expressed passive voice verb, and you do not know who the action is. There may be an assumption that it's God, but it sometimes is just an assumption, and you've got to be very careful about that. Oftentimes that's true. God is the actor. But let's be careful every time we come to a passive without an agent expressed. Number two, the direct agent. The direct agent of a passive voice verb indicates who performs the action of the verb. The preposition hupa, followed by an object in the ablative case, that's form two, indicates direct agency. And I've given you an example. Agairon tai, they are being raised, hupa tu kuryu, by the Lord. The Lord's doing the raising. That would be an indicator of a direct action, kind of agent. The direct agent, rather. The intermediate agent. The intermediate agent is the individual through whom the direct agent acts. Again, the agent is doing the action of the verb, but the implication is that there's another individual acting behind the intermediate agent. Verbs other than passives can take an intermediate agent. This is very important. We often associate them with passives, but they can be not passive as well. The preposition dia, with its object being in the ablative case, that is, form two, indicates intermediate agency. It is best translated through rather than by, though in some instances the English cannot use through So buy is the only alternative. This follows the principle that when you translate from one language into another, the rules of the new language into which you're translating, that is the object language, prevail over the rules of the language from which you're translating. And there are times when by is required because of English idiom, even though through is the indication, that is, it's an intermediate agent. So watch that. Here's an example from the Greek New Testament, Matthew 1:22. Hina plerothe ta hurethen hupa tu kuriu dia tu prophetu. And I put this in here because it does something really wonderful. Hina means in order that. Plerothe is it might or might be fulfilled. It is a passive voice verb. It's in the subjunctive mood. So since it's in the subjunctive mood, we use might as a subjunctive mood indicator. The passive form is be fulfilled. That might be fulfilled. The utterance, the word hrema is utterance. So it is the subject. Notice the form, tahrema, the utterance. And then hupa tu kuriu, by the Lord, dia tu prophetu, through the prophet. It was the prophet that actually did the uttering or the writing, but it was the utterance. It was by the Lord initially. The direct agent was the Lord. The intermediate agent was the prophet. So there you have a good example of the two kinds of agency in one sentence in Matthew 1:22. One other thing about this is might be fulfilled. I noticed the translation clause is according to the original word order. In practice, one would smooth the translation by placing the subject before the verb. That would be the English order. In order that the utterance might be fulfilled by the Lord through the prophet. So that would be the English word order. And when I'm smoothing out my word literal translations, that's what I do. I change the word order around to the normal English word order. But I didn't do so in this example because I wanted to talk about it. So let's go on to the next agency. Number four, the impersonal agent. This is an unfortunate designation because the impersonal agents, sometimes the impersonal agent is a person, such as the Holy Spirit or even Satan. Impersonal agency uses the preposition in with its object in the instrumental form 3. Here's an example. In to archonti ton daimonion ekbalai ta daimonia. In to archonti, by the prince or ruler, archonti can be either prince or ruler. The onti ending is the dative locative instrumental form, but here it's an instrumental form used as an agent. By the agency, we would say, is the meaning. By the prince or the ruler, ton daimonion is of the demons, ekbalai, he casts out, ta daimona, daimonia, the demons. Matthew 9:34. So in to archonti is impersonal agent, even though the prince of the demons is a person. So that's unfortunate that it's called that. The reason for it is because the word indicates a function that is unusual in some way. Sometimes the person is viewed in such a negative light or that the impersonal agency is used. Other times, that's not true. Sometimes it's just a fact that the noun who is the object of the preposition in always indicates impersonal agency in these functions, is in the neuter form. If it's in the neuter form, usually in is used to indicate agency, even and it's called impersonal agency. Here's a good example, number two here. In heni pneumati, hemais, pontes, eis, hen, soma, ebaptistemen. By one spirit, we all, into one body, were baptized. That's the word order. I'd, again, change it around to smooth it out. But you can see that. In heni pneumati, by one Spirit. Well, the Holy Spirit's a person. And yet, impersonal agency is used because the word Spirit's neuter. And neuter nouns usually, when indicating agency, have an in rather than a hupa or a dia. They have in. So, also notice that the verb is at the end. By one Spirit, we were all into one body baptized. So, we would switch that around and say, we were all baptized by one Spirit into one body, and to make it more sense in English. That's directly from 1 Corinthians 12:13. Paragraph 11.6. Verbs whose objects are not in form 4. Some transitive active verbs occur with their direct objects in some form other than form 4. That's the accusative form. Some verbs have objects in more than one form, such as akouo, which objects can either be form 2 or form 4. Arco may have an object in form 2, but may also have an infinitive as an object. When arco has its object in form 2, it means I rule. But when arco is in the omai vocabulary form, it means I begin, and its object may be an infinitive. I begin to do something. I begin to run or to jump or whatever. Both the verbs pistuo and apokrinomai regularly take their objects in form 3. One's an omega verb, pistuo. One's an omai verb, apokrinomai. But they regularly take their objects in form 3. The object of pistuo is often a personal locative. As we say in English, I believe in him. However, this verb is often intransitive and is followed by a prepositional phrase, often ice with the accusative form, that is, form 4. So there you have an unusual set of circumstances, don't you? It is not always the same in Greek as it is in English. We just have a different language structure. And once you have a different language structure, all bets are off, basically. So different languages act differently. I often tell my Greek students, this ain't English. This is Greek. And so the Greek mind doesn't work exactly the way the English mind works. Ice with the accusative form 4 is the prepositional phrase that often occurs, pistuo. Technically, all these forms act as limiting the action of the verb, including the prepositional phrase, which is generally ascribed to form 4. Even though there are linguistic reasons for the occurrence of such objects in either form 2 or form 3, they are still functioning as objective case nouns, and therefore limit the action of the verb. That's the definition of an accusative, by the way. It's the case of limitation. But that's not limited to the accusative form. Other forms, 2 and 3, as well as form 4, can limit the action of verbs, and so can infinitives, and so can prepositional phrases, and on and on. It becomes, it's much more complicated than the traditional first-year grammars tell you. So be careful. You might want to come back and read this again, or even listen to this little terrible lecture I'm giving you. Diagramming the passive voice verb, paragraphs 11.7. Example. Hey, aletheia didaskai in tois logois tu apostolou. Translated, hey, aletheia, the truth, didaskatai, is being taught, or is taught, or is being taught, in tois logois, by the words, that's the impersonal agency, to apostolou. And notice the way it's diagrammed. The hey, aletheia is the subject, didaskatai is the verb, obviously, and then the agent, in logois, occurs right beneath the passive voice verb. And then, of course, since it's tois logois, the tois goes under logois. And since it's the words of the apostle, we put apostolou under logos. Remember that genitives are generally adjectival under nouns, and logois is a noun. So, and then we parse it for you, present, transitive, passive, indicative, third person, singular, from didasko. Exercise 11.8. Translation and diagramming, and I want you to go ahead and try that and see what you can do with it. There's actually 23 examples here, so be careful. Okay, good. That ends this lesson 11.